Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Aaron Newcomb joins me. We're going to talk about Web 2 Project, project management software that lives on the web, just like Microsoft Project and all those other ones, but better because it's open source. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Newcomb, episode 255, recorded June 12, 2013, Web 2 Project. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneEngine.com, bringing you each week, or as often as I can make it, the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, the projects you might be using every day, the projects you might not have heard of. And we have no exception this week, but first let me bring on my co-host, Aaron Newcomb. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Randall. Good to be back.
Cool. Hey, the background looks a little different. It's not the Twit studio. Are you home again?
I am at home getting ready to head into work, getting ready for my 2-hour commute into the office. Actually, a lot of times when I do that, I start at home, do my first meeting at home, and then makes the commute a little bit more bearable. It gets it down to about an hour, hour and a half.
Cool, cool. Well, we have a really great guest on today. Let me find the notes here for him. It is Keith Casey. He's representing the Web2 Project. That's redundant. Web2 Project Squared. No, Web2 Project, which is, it claims to be a free open source business oriented project management system built for the future, but usable today. So I haven't had much time to play with this. I certainly didn't install it or anything, but I've looked through some of the documentation. It looks like it's got, it claims managing any number of projects. It looks like it has a task management relationship in terms of like dependencies and maybe some load leveling and things like that. A unified calendar, iCalendar support. The kind of thing that you might be able to use to replace, say, a commercial software that would be similar would be like a Microsoft Project. And in fact, I think you can even import from Microsoft Project directly into this thing once you get it set up. So that's what I know about it so far. I've got lots of questions, so let's see how that goes. What do you know about this so far?
Virtually nothing about the project itself. Of course, I mean, working in the enterprise space, I'm used to project managers and using different project managers. So it can really make the difference between a successful project and a project that has a lot of problems or people start missing meetings and things like that. So if you have a tool that works really well and works with your style, it can make a big difference in the life of whatever the project is you're working on. So I'm really excited to see how this might help people and how it might differ from other project managers out in the marketplace.
Yeah, especially other open source ones. We want to make sure we get a comparison of that. So I think without further ado, let's go ahead and bring on Keith Casey. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Hi. And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm speaking to you from Austin, Texas.
Awesome. Awesome. That's a fun place to be. I've been there a few times. Deep Ollum. Oh my God. I've lost so many brain cells there. No, wait, that's Dallas, isn't it?
I believe so, but Austin will make you lose some brain cells too.
It's 9th Street in Austin, right?
6th. That's where the chaos is.
I knew it was a number. See, that's how many brain cells I lost there. I can't remember where I was at the end of the day, but there was some nice rooftops and we were dancing on it after having a few drinks. It was definitely awesome. But that isn't what we're here to talk about today. We're here to talk about Web2 Project. And as you heard at the opening of the show, I gave sort of an overview from my perspective. Why don't you give us a 30,000-foot view and what problem Web2 Project solves?
So Web2 Project fundamentally is an open source project management system. The whole purpose of it is specifically to enable collaboration around projects. You mentioned earlier that it could potentially replace Microsoft Project. I think Microsoft Project is great for project sort of scheduling and prediction, but for the actual collaboration execution, like on the day-to-day operations of the project, we think Web2 Project really works out. Because of things like you noted, shared collaborative calendar, or task tracking, you can actually log time in the system and set up budgets against those things. So you can sort of get an idea of where your project lies on a day-to-day basis.
Now, what scope would this be used? Is this something that I would use personally to manage my own flows, or does it only start making sense when I've got multiple people and resources involved?
I think for a single person, it's kind of overkill. It's just it's a little heavier than what you'd sort of look for. I found small teams, especially the distributed teams. We've sort of purposely stayed away from the software project management space. Generally, software developers, myself included, look at any sort of project management tool and they say, oh, we don't, our process doesn't match that, or you know, we think we can do it better than that. And we just sort of withdrew from that completely, and we tend to focus on non-software developed or non-software development projects. It seems to work out pretty well.
I would think that for software development, it's more of a, you know, using something like Agile and that sort of thing would make a lot more sense. And because this seems more suited for the kinds of things where, say, like construction, where you can kind of guess that putting up these three walls is going to take, you know, a good weekend or whatever. And those have to be done before the roof starts getting put on that corner of the thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Web to Project really excels at sort of laying out those tasks and putting the relationships between those. Things like this task must be done before this other task, that these tasks all sort of cascade together, and here's the end day, that sort of thing. So yeah, you're right. Construction is great. We have a number of customers in like legal firms, because the process there is very well laid out and very structured and very predictable.
And probably also has a lot of interesting deadlines that you go to be able to say, you know, use my critical path analysis to make sure I've covered that by the time it gets there.
Yeah, absolutely. And then one of the modules that we also have is like file management. So you can attach individual files to at the project level or at the individual task. So lawyers just love that. They seem to like a lot of documents.
Yeah, so it's sort of a mini CMS. You wouldn't call it a full-blown CMS, but at least you have some way of having document management.
Yeah, absolutely. Along with some simple version control around it.
Cool. And so is this software I download and install on a server, or is this a hosted solution or some combination of both?
It's something you download. We're available on GitHub. So if you go github.com/web2project, you'll find all of the source code. We were previously on SourceForge. We've been open source the entire life of the project. We were previously GPL, and we're actually switching to a BSD license, which has been very educational and spent a lot of time with lawyers making sure we're doing that right.
Well, as long as we're talking about that, what's the motivation for that?
So that actually came about for a number of reasons. The big concern was from a number of non-technical companies, manufacturers specifically, that they're concerned about what the GPL means for their data sort of in the complex data structures of Web2Project. And we had a number of software companies, like big name brands that you'd sort of predict, that were nervous about the GPL. But when like day-to-day manufacturers, when their lawyers came to us and said, hey, look, we're concerned about this, then we started investigating it.
You know, I often have that argument with people who are GPL proponents. I'm more of an open license MIT BSD sort of guy. I often tell them that in the practical world, making something GPL means it will be absolutely used by fewer locations. And they say, yes, but it's more pure, it's more moral. And I go, well, at the end of the day, do you want your software to be widely used and help a lot of people? Or do you want your software to be very restricted? And I don't care where you stand on either side of that. I just want people to be aware of the fact that when you pick the GPL, you automatically exclude a lot of potential very, you know, forwarding uses of the thing. And I'm glad to see that you did that. Was that a team effort to think about that, or was that more driven by you, or how did that come about?
I was the one that brought the issue to the rest of the team, but it really was absolutely team-driven. We had to have everyone sign off on changing the license, like with respect to their particular contributions. We had a couple people who didn't sign off, so we had to refactor their code out of the system. But probably the main motivation was that Web2Project fundamentally is a collaborative system. It's a sort of hub for collecting a lot of information. So it might integrate with your LDAP server, with your email server, with Microsoft Exchange. It imports from Microsoft Project. So there's all these components around it where we don't know necessarily where we're getting the data from or where we're pushing it to. So we need to integrate pretty seamlessly, and GPL makes that challenging.
Yes. That's good that you've gotten contributor requirements. I see also in the blog post that I saw from about this that you had a few people that you're just going to have to write their code out of the software.
Yes, that was a lot of fun. We basically had to go through commit by commit through our entire history and figure out, okay, here's where the license change happened. Here are the individuals who went ahead and signed off on it. Here are the time there were 888 commits that were from people who didn't sign off on the conversion.
Yeah, definitely something where you want to get the license right in the first place. What's the history of Web2Project, and how did you get involved?
So WebDriver project actually goes back to late 2007 or so. We actually forked from another project called Dot Project, which has a history going back to about 2000, 2001. So we as a project have been active for about 5.5 years. We've had 2 major releases and I think 7 or 8 minor releases since then. One of the things I did want to share today is that we're working on the release candidate number 2 of version 3.0. We're hoping that will be out by the end of this week.
Ooh, awesome, because I saw some references to 3.0, but then I looked at the release list. I didn't see it yet, so that's great. So this is a sort of a pre-announcement for what you hope to be a release later in the week. That's cool.
Yeah, it's been a long weekend.
I can imagine. I know how it goes when it gets close to releases. It's very crazy that way. So what was the purpose of forking from, what did you say, Dot Project?
Yes. So back in 2007 timeframe or so, everyone who's active on WebDriver project now was active on Dot Project. And the sort of conversation came up of development had stalled. That's what happens with big complex systems. We ran into the situation of, do we want to sort of rebuild from the ground up, sort of start with a clean slate, or refactor what we had? And the project leadership of Dot Project decided that they wanted to rebuild from the ground up. The other half of the team, we disagreed and we said, look, there are tens of thousands, I'm sorry, at that point, thousands of installs of Dot Project out there. If we just rebuild from the ground up, we're leaving all those people behind. And we're sort of entering the state where it's a zombie project where nobody can contribute to the next version because it's not functional. And they don't want to contribute to the old version because, well, it's dead. So instead, we took the approach of refactoring. And so people who have previously used Dot Project can upgrade and convert to us without a problem. And it's been fully functional all the way along. And it's been educational, very educational, going back and cleaning up code that in some cases is 12 years old.
And so is Dot Project continuing as a separate forked project still?
Yeah. It hasn't had a huge number of releases, but it's had a number of them since then.
Awesome. Is there any reason for me to choose? Well, it sounds like WebDriver project has more advantages at this point. Obviously, you would believe that or you wouldn't be working on it.
Right. A couple things that we completely refactored the back end. So performance on some screens is anywhere from double to, in a couple cases, like 100x improvement. We've rebuilt the system in terms of using good object-oriented principles. So the amount of code in the system has dropped precipitously. I think when we started the project, we had roughly 200,000 lines of code, 30-couple percent code duplication. And now at this point, we're at about 150,000 lines of code and less than 2% duplication. So a lot of cleanup, a lot of refactoring.
So what components, I mean, we kind of talked a little bit about roughly what components, but could you give us a rundown, a list of exactly what components are included for people that may be considering going with Web2 Project as opposed to some of the more standard project management tools?
Sure. From the top level, there's a project module, which you can go ahead and you can lay out the basic information about a project, start date, due date, budgets, things along those lines. From within there, you go ahead and you use the task module to lay out specific tasks. Within those tasks, you can go ahead and you can say, here are the relationships, whether that's dependencies, whether that's like a dynamic or a roll-up task that you might see in other systems. And then you can go ahead and you can assign all those tasks to people. So you can do all that assignment right there within the system, and it goes ahead and sends off email notifications. And then those people who are using the system on a day-to-day basis can come back to the system and log their time directly within it. So you've got complete time tracking and everything right there. In addition, there's a forms module where if they respond to email, it can go ahead and capture that within the system. So you've got sort of a complete audit trail of what's going on. From there, you've also got the files module, which I talked about earlier, which allows you to attach files to individual projects or specific tasks. So think if you're working on something and you have a technical document or something you want to attach to a particular task, you can do that. Mentioned also the calendar module. So you can go ahead and you can have sort of a shared calendar and look and see, like, for a given person, what does their calendar look like? For a given project, what does it look like? Or for a group of projects, like if you're at a higher level sort of portfolio management. From within that, let's see, it has a contact system so you know like who's active on which projects and things like that. You can actually set up project stakeholders. So you can say these 3 contacts, even though they're not users of the system, they're never going to log in, they get all the updates whenever there's a project, whenever one of their projects of interest is updated. And sort of the thing that goes on top of all that is really, really fine-grained access control. At a high level, you can say, this person's allowed to see this project, can edit this project, or in some cases can't see that this project even exists. But you can go super fine-grained. You can say, this person can see project A, B, and C, but they can't view any of the tasks on project A, because maybe you don't want to show them like what the billing rates are or something like that. But on project B, they can go ahead and they can see tasks and they create them. And there's a complete audit trail behind all of that. We have the U.S. federal government is using us in a number of places, and audit trails were super important on their side of things.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. And also, what about integration with other so you mentioned, for example, the access controls, but does that integrate with like LDAP, for example, so that people that already have a system implemented for access control, they wouldn't have to set up a completely different system for this?
Yes, absolutely. So it authenticates against LDAP right off the bat. It doesn't import sort of like the group or permissions from that sort of structure. We've looked and experimented with that a number of times, but we found most people don't care. They've got their sort of structure laid out in LDAP, but that's not how they actually manage projects. The LDAP sort of represents how their org chart is laid out.
Right, right. And what about integrating with other things? I'm thinking like, you know, I wouldn't want to have to set up necessarily all my contacts from scratch. I wouldn't necessarily, maybe I have my own calendaring system implemented where I work. I mean, what other integrations are there into other standard pieces of software that people might be using?
So right on the output side of things, we've got iCalendar. So like on my Google Calendar, I'm subscribed to my own Web2Project feed. So I've got that information showing up automatically. Unfortunately, it's not bidirectional yet. We're playing with a couple of strategies on how to do that. We haven't sort of come up with the official one. There's a couple modules out there that work pretty well. We just want to make sure that when we bring that into the core system, we nail it. I mentioned earlier, Microsoft Project integration. So you can import from Microsoft Project, and there's a couple of modules to allow you to also export to it. So if you want to pass along the sort of results and the ongoing status of your project, you can pass that along in a PDF if you wanted to, with like a Gantt chart image sort of layout. If you want to export that to Project, you can go ahead and send that along too. On the contact side of things, there's not really a formal process. I have a thing that reads my email and imports all those contacts automatically and sort of builds up that tree. But that's sort of a one-off project I did sort of more as a curiosity than anything.
Right. Yeah. Because I can imagine, you know, this would be I know that like for where I work, for example, now my new job is all Microsoft based internally. The one nice thing about it is they're standardized on that, and so everything works together. And so as much as I hate using Microsoft, at least things are really, really integrated really well. So the calendar works with the contacts, works with, you know, instant messaging, and works with everything. And so I can see that this would be a kind of a big deal for people trying to implement something or trying to decide on something. I mean, I love that it at least integrates with iCalendar, because that's a big step. And I know that Thunderbird early on had some issues bringing in, you know, the calendaring, the whole Lightning project, and bringing in calendars. I mean, so there's ways to do it, but I'm sure it's not easy to get that done. Is there you mentioned modules earlier? Is that I don't know if you mean like your specific modules in the code, or do you mean that is there a modular a module system where people can actually build modules to plug into this framework?
Yes, absolutely. So in the re-architecture we've done in the last 2 years since our last major release, we've went ahead and built out a very clean module architecture. So there's an entire API that goes along with it. Conceptually, is built very similarly to WordPress or Drupal, with the hook system and having very clear places on where to plug in. So if you actually look at Web2Project, within one of the directories is modules. And so we have the architecture there allows you to go ahead and enable modules set on a permissions basis, integrate it with other modules. So if you have something that attaches to a task or a project, you can go ahead and do that. Like we have a risk management module that sort of implements the PMBOK, the Project Management Book of Knowledge. That's the Project Management Professional Program, PMI Institute. It implements that version of risk management. So then it actually integrates with the project and the tasks module. So you can create individual risks, assign priority and impact and everything, and attach those to the projects and tasks as you need.
Oh, that's great. I mean, that really helps because, you know, there's always something that somebody wants to do. And so that the having that architecture in place is really, really nice. What about templating? I mean, is there a way to make a template for, you know, here's the template for all of our construction projects, for example?
Yes. So you go ahead and you create a template just like any other project. So you create a project. You say, here are the due dates. Here are the tasks and how they relate. You can actually go as far as assigning people to those tasks. So if you have like somebody who always does inspections or someone who always does security, something like that, you can attach those. You can even attach files to those individual tasks of, I know this document or this contract or something will be needed at this stage. And then when you go and create a new project, over on the side, it has a little dropdown that says import from. And then you just choose whichever project you want to import from. And then it uses the start date on the project that you set, but on the new project, and then imports the other project using that new start date. So you can go ahead and you can say, okay, starting next Tuesday, what does my end date look like? And then the system actually goes ahead and figures out what your working hours are, what your working days are, you know, Monday through Friday, whatever, and then estimates out what the new completion date is. And that is a horribly painful bit of math. It's ridiculous.
I'm sure it is. What about resource sharing? Like, if there's is there a concept of global resources? Like, here's a resource. I've got five different projects going on, but they all can't use this resource at the same time.
Yes, we go ahead and we capture that. We're not sort of surfacing those warnings or problems at this point. But we can. There's a report on the back end that says, "Hey, this person is, you know, 250% utilized." So the next step that we want to do in version 3.1 is actually surface those things so that when you're laying out that project, it can go ahead and tell you about those things. Of course, that makes projects due dates or completion estimation ridiculously complex because that hard math I just talked about, this just multiplied all of it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's talk a little bit now about installing. How difficult is it to actually get this set up and running?
So we very much looked at how WordPress does it with they've got sort of a 5-minute install where it's click, click, click. And we try and get it to the exact same process. So you download it, you create a MySQL database, on the first screen, it says, hey, we're going to check all these different things. We check for all the plugins and everything that it needs. There aren't many that are required. It goes ahead, and if any of those are missing, it tells you you're missing this module or it must be this version or whatever, and goes ahead and stops you right there. If you have all those, which, like I said, they're very common modules, PHP, MySQL, that sort of thing, then it sends you to the database credential screen. You click that, and then it goes ahead and does a sort of migration model to bring your database from whatever version you're on to the latest and greatest.
So you actually are upgrading, like, MySQL, for example, in the background?
No, I'm sorry, not MySQL, the core system itself, all web to project itself.
Your database. So
right. The system is laid out so it can figure out which version of the database you're running, and then, which version of the web to project database structure you're running, and bring it to latest and greatest.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what else is required? I mean, you mentioned MySQL, or do you support Postgres?
No, not at this point. We've looked into it a couple times. We actually get more requests for SQL Server than Postgres. I think it's primarily shops like you described earlier that are mostly Microsoft, and they're trying to give it a try.
Yeah. Any plans to support any other databases, or is it MySQL only for now?
MySQL only for now. SQL Server is high on the list. Oracle's actually next on the list. So we get a lot of interest from that side of things. Unfortunately, everyone on our team usually runs, you know, OS 10 or Linux and everything like that. So we don't have any good SQL Server experts on, like, around. So that's been a challenge for that reason.
Yeah, I was at first kind of surprised that Oracle was even on the radar. But I guess given who you're targeting here, I mean, there are probably people, you know, in large organizations managing these projects. So I guess that makes sense. And then you mentioned PHP. I'm guessing this is all built in PHP, XML, and HTML. As far as the rendering and interaction.
PHP version 5.2 and above. So if you're running, if you've installed it since 2007, 2008, you're probably covered by that. That's not a problem. We are fully compatible everything through PHP 5.5, which should be released later this summer. So there's that. There's PHP 5.2 and above, MySQL, Apache or Nginx. We support either. We also support IIS. And that's really about it. It's a pretty simple web stack, and we do that on purpose. We really want it to be available just about everywhere.
Yeah, that's great. So one more question, and that is, you know, if I was taking a project management class, for example, right? Because I know there's, you can get certified as a project manager. There's different certifications and things. So if I was doing that, and then I came to this, like, would it all make sense to me? Would it flow the way I would expect it to flow and all that? I'm just wondering if there's any kind of standards in the project management space that you need to adhere to.
Yes, there's the PMBOK, or the Project Management Book of Knowledge, from the Project Management Institute. And I actually have a copy of it over on my shelf right here. And it adheres to that pretty closely, with the exception of the resource leveling that we mentioned earlier. So if we brought that to sort of the forefront, it would match that too. But we've got risk tracking, we've got the task management, we've got sort of all that audit control and documentation along the lines. So it's not perfect, but it sort of... It feels familiar. It's like if you go and visit London, you understand what they're saying. There's a little bit of an accent, but you generally get it 90% of the time.
So if I go to a shared hosting solution, like say my former client, Media Temple, and they have like a shared hosting where you don't really have access to, you know, like the root, because you're just basically you're sharing MySQL and PHP. Would this work in that, or do I need more power than that?
That should work just fine. That's why we took the WordPress approach of we really want this to work everywhere. So you don't need root access, as long as you have, I believe the modules specifically you need are a PHP MySQL. You need a, actually, I think that's it. I think all the other modules that we sort of support are optional, like the PHP LDAP integration. That's optional. You can authenticate against LDAP, but you don't have to. And then curl is also optional. So we try and keep it as bare bones as possible.
Well, that's awesome. Did you know of people using it that way?
Yes. Actually, I have a couple test installs on DreamHost, and it's worked out perfectly fine. And that's like the bare bones minimum DreamHost account without a problem. But it should work just about everywhere.
That's cool, because I know some people that don't want to have to set up their own server and wouldn't mind using a shared host for something like this for, say, a small team of, say, carpenters or I keep going back to building, because that's every time I see project management, it's always about, you know, construction. So it's kind of the way that is for me. Yeah. So also earlier you mentioned modules, and it sounded like there are modules that come with the distro. But is there some sort of public module repository as well?
That's one of the things we're trying to work on for this release. Right now, the only way I'm doing it is I use the web-to-project user on GitHub to sort of clone the repository so that there's at least one page where you can see a list of all of them. But right now, we've got a holidays module so you can identify, and these are all user-contributed. We've got the holidays module so you can identify these are the holidays our team respects. We have a very international community. There's one for drag and drop calendar support, just like you'd have in like Google Calendar or whatever. There's one for exporting to Microsoft Project. There's the risk management. There's a to-do list manager, which is along the lines of Basecamp, because Basecamp is great for managing to-dos, not so great for managing tasks. So this is a way to sort of blend the two. I think there's another five or six.
Okay, and what's your development process like? Are you test-driven development, lots of tests everywhere, or is it all ad hoc like most people do, but PHP, or something in between?
It's been something in between. Previously, when we formed the project, it was entirely ad hoc. We actually, probably in our first year or so, we recruited a guy out of Canada who, his passion has been unit tests. So we started from zero unit tests and got up to about 300 or so in about 9 months. And I want to say at this point we're at about 600, with the core of the test being focused around like the core functionality, especially the module system, because there are so many modules that depend on one another. We really want to make sure that that's nailed.
Do you have a sense of code coverage from that?
No, not offhand. I know some of the core utility modules are well over 100% if you want to look at that metric. I'm not a big fan of code coverage. There's lots of ways to scam it. So I just try and make sure that things are tested pretty thoroughly.
And are you testing all the way down to the generated HTML using something like Selenium?
Not at this point. Up until this coming release, our HTML has been ugly, horribly, horribly ugly. And I'll be the first one to admit that.
It always gets that.
So one of the things that we haven't talked about publicly, but I'll go ahead and share here, is right after our version 3 release, we actually have a Bootstrap-based theme that cuts the average page size by 60-70% and makes it much more clean, much more functional and usable. So now that we've got that coming out, we'll probably go with Selenium or something at that stage.
Yeah, I've got a couple of clients that are both moving towards Bootstrap. I think it's really a nice clean design to get us there. So that'll be great. I'm stumbling now because I just stared the wrong direction. I've completely lost track after you said Bootstrap. So your development process, it sounds like you have a distributed team.
Yes, we've got a guy in Portugal, a couple major contributors in Germany, my buddy in Nova Scotia, myself here in Austin. We've got a guy in South Carolina, Oklahoma. I think there's a couple people I'm forgetting. I'm sorry, guys.
they'll let you know.
Oh yeah, I'll hear about it.
You didn't mention me. So how does that work for you? How do you make that work on an open source project when you're so diverse?
That's actually one of the first features we put in the Web2 project when we forked was time zone support. So we can very clearly look at the system and say, okay, what time is it in all those other places? Other than that, it's a lot of email. It's a lot of sort of self-organizing around what people want to do. I'm the biggest or most active contributor just because I'm the project lead and I'm the one that's sort of the most fired up about this most of the time. But we all have some hand in it.
And how about theming it? If I want this to sort of fit inside, say, a larger portal within my company, is there a way to modify how it looks, the look and feel of it?
So I said earlier that it was ugly. part of that was that it has been very hard to theme. So there are the three sort of core themes that we release with the system, and that's been one of the big driving factors behind the Bootstrap cleanup so that we can make it more easy to theme. If you look at version 2, 3, 2, 4, the last major releases, there's a lot of HTML, CSS, everything sort of blended together. There's a lot of hard-coded styles. In this release for 3.0, we've ripped almost all that out to be CSS-based. So much more easily themed. I still wouldn't say that it's up to the standard where it needs to be.
Cool. And how did, I think you mentioned this briefly, but how did you get involved with Dot Project originally and what brought you to open source in the first place?
So I was working for the US federal government. I spent 9 years in Washington, D.C. And when I got out or I was looking to get out of the government, I ran into this problem of everything I did on my resume was proprietary or classified, which it's really horrible experience going to a job interview outside those circles and saying, I can do this. And they say, okay, tell us about it. And you say, I can't. So I really sort of got involved in the open source community as a result of that. I wanted to be able to have something that I could show potential employers, that I could sort of have a living resume and take it forward. Project management sort of suits my mentality. I was an electrical engineer in my undergraduate studies. So it's sort of, it's a nice laid out process. There's a nice flow to it. So it just made a lot of sense to jump in there.
Yeah, I know. I have a friend that's in some sort of, I don't think it's top secret clearance, but he works as a tech in working with Windows and Linux machines all the time. And I'm sure he has a hard time saying what exactly he was doing. I mean, he could only tell me so much as well. So it's I can fully appreciate the problem with that. And so it's interesting now that you found open source as a way to work on that. Do you do things other than PHP in the open source community?
Primarily PHP. I used to be active in the Java users group in DC. That's what I did a lot. Now that I'm here in Austin, I actually am one of the co-founders of the Austin NoSQL group. And it's really sort of platform agnostic. We get guys from TenGen to talk about Mongo. We get Couchbase guys. Cassandra is based here in Austin. So we get a lot of that. And then I'm also one of the co-founders of the Austin API group. With a couple other local guys here. And that was sort of driven primarily by my job with Twilio at this point. But I also do a lot in just API design and architecture and actually have a Web2Project API coming out and probably we're hoping the 3.0 release or 3.1 okay. release. I'm sorry.
Since you mentioned Twilio, I'll let you plug them just for a second. What do they do?
We're a platform for changing how businesses communicate. We allow you to plug your applications into the telephone network. So you can have it send text messages, receive text messages, make and receive phone calls and react to that. So think integration with like customer relationship management. Think American Idol voting. Anything like that where you actually want to reach out and touch somebody, you can have them interact back with it.
Now, there's nothing open source about that that I remember, although there's, I think there's some APIs and stuff that are sort of interesting with the open source attachments to them. But let's go back to the Web2 Project for a second. What's the business model for Web2 Project?
Making something that works. There's not really a strong business model around it. We want to have something that actually positively affects that space. Project management is a horrible, horrible space to look at in terms of success rates, in terms of actually hitting deadlines and things like that. So we see this as a way to help contribute to that, or at least in some cases, have an idea of how far off you are from hitting your goals.
Well, that sounds like a great answer then. So this is more a labor of love for the dozen people that you mentioned.
Yes. Yeah. And we've got probably 4,000 or 5,000 people active in our community. Last time I checked, just like WordPress, we have a little script that phones home and gives us like version updates to know which version of Web2 Project you're running. That's, you can turn that off if you want. It just goes to our main server, nothing personally identifiable. But it tells us that there are roughly 10,000 installs out there right now. So there's some people who seem to be listening.
Do you have any sense of the largest sort of install?
The largest one that I know of and I've worked on directly was for a university system in the Midwest where they ran into a problem of professors would come to them at the beginning of the semester and say, hey, I need Microsoft Project installed. So the IT guys would say, okay, here's the disk. Go ahead and install it. And then the profs would come back after the end of the fall semester and their machine was all messed up and everything. They said, I need, you know, a fresh machine and I want Microsoft Project installed. And they'd say, okay, just give us your disk and you can reinstall it. And they'd say, what disk? So they started using Web2 Project specifically because they were spending upwards of $100,000 a semester on Microsoft Project.
Wow.
So they wanted another tool into the mix.
And so if I'm interested in replacing Microsoft Project, which I can always get support at some cost for Microsoft itself, with Web2 Project, what are my options to reduce the risk of not having support available?
Well, right now we've got the forum community and everything like that. We've got a pretty active group there. We've got GitHub issues and everything like that. I've punted around the idea of being able to do like custom commercial support on top of it. It's not something that we've really fully fleshed out.
And also with the international team that you mentioned earlier, I imagine there's some internationalization with this software as well. Has it been translated into other languages?
Yes, we support 7 languages out of the box. English, French, German, Russian, Czech, Italian, Portuguese, and Brazilian Portuguese. And then we've got a couple other translations that are coming. I think Polish is on. I think there's a module that supports Polish. I think there's another one in the mix. I forget. It supports it across the board, though.
Cool. And did I hear Spanish?
Yes.
Okay, good. Maybe I didn't hear it. Maybe you said it. I didn't hear it, apparently. How would you know what I heard? We have a question, actually, from the chat room. We have a live chat room while we're taping the show. Weezer wants to know, any ability to work with or import the open source Gantt project?
So we've looked at that a couple times, but not at this point. We get one or two requests for it every couple months, but not a huge amount. So it's been low on the priority list.
I can understand that as an open source project with limited resources, you have to prioritize things based on what you think will be the biggest bang for the buck. And getting only 1 or 2 requests a month never sounds like a very very good proximate for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I need to also ask, why did you move from D.C. to Austin? Probably to get away from government or what?
Yeah, so I spent 9 years in D.C., like I said. I ran my own firm for about 5 or 6 years of that. Sort of ran into the situation of I got tired of the place. D.C. is fantastic if you want to be involved in politics, if you're really interested in that. I came from a startup community, and I wanted to do startups more. And D.C., it's tough to do that. And in a lot of cases, my last startup in D.C., I was pitching people to join us. And it was kind of entertaining because we would go to people who are making $150,000 a year and say, hey, look, if you join us, you can make $75,000 a year. You can work 80 hours instead of the 40 that you do now. And maybe if you're lucky, a few years from now, you'll make even more. And that's not a very good pitch. In Austin, the culture is so completely different. When I first got here right off the bat, it was fantastic. Got plugged in pretty quickly. There's very much a cooperative spirit here. I love the place. I totally fell in love.
Cool. And you also wanted me to ask you, what's the best barbecue place in Austin?
Yeah, that there's a toss-up there. Franklin's is the gold standard. The problem is that they stop serving food once they're out. So you might get in line on a weekday morning and not actually get food. So after that, the options, Stubbs on the east side, Rudy's. It's a gas station-based barbecue place, but it's fantastic.
Yeah, awesome. Bartman in the chat room just said Rudy's as well. So he's giving a plug for that. So it sounds like a good place.
Excellent. Except that my coworker, who just got back from Austin just yesterday, says if he doesn't answer Cruises, it's up north, I think, by the airport, then he's making a mistake.
I've not been to Cruises. I actually live in the south side of Austin, so the north side is a whole other area.
And, of course, there's always the classic Salt Lake, which now has like 19 outlets or something somewhere. I went to the original one about 10 years ago.
Oh, is that Driftwood?
Well, I don't know what Driftwood means, but Salt Lake is like 5 to 10 miles. The original was like 5 to 10 miles south of the city. But apparently they've opened up all sorts of places in town now, but it's sort of like the gold standard for that. Tom in the chat room says, yes, it's Driftwood. Cool. So this week in barbecue.
Hey, there are worse things to talk about.
Right. Well, we're almost out of time. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you would like to make sure that we cover? Oh, first, are you looking for more people to help contribute to the core?
Yeah, absolutely. There are we know the use cases we're familiar with. We understand dependencies and rollups and things like that. We'd love to have sort of a number of people who have a background in development who are actual project managers, like especially like PMP certified people. That would be fantastic, just to sort of get that validation that we were talking about earlier. But also, we need a designer. Like I said, the system's kind of ugly. So a couple designers to lend a hand, if nothing else, to take what we have with Bootstrap and sort of take it to a next level of, look, this isn't just clean, but it's a good user experience around it.
Cool. I always you should see my web projects. My web projects are totally ugly. I'm a programmer, man. That's all I think about. I don't think about the pretty layout. And so sometimes my clients say, well, can you make this so that the buttons are red, except for the one that's active, would make it green? And I go, I guess I could, but why not just bold the word or something? Goes, no. I want it to be really obvious that these are active and inactive. And I went, I guess that makes more sense. So it's me. I can't do this stuff. It's not my area at all.
I understand. I'll make it work. Somebody else needs to make it pretty.
Mm-hmm. So I've got one more quick question before we close up here, and that is, it seems to be perfect for a mobile application. Now, I guess you could always interface through to the website, via your device, which is what a lot of people do. But that gets a little cumbersome, especially if you're on a small cell phone. So is there any mobile apps, or are you looking for anyone to develop a mobile app for this project?
Yes, we'd love to have somebody develop a mobile app. We don't have any right now. If you're familiar with the Yahoo widget engine, it used to be that thing that would sit on your desktop and you could interact with it. There was an app for that, but Yahoo has since deprecated that along with a bunch of other stuff. But I'd love to see an Android app. I'm starting to do more and more Android development, so I'm looking into that. I just wanted to make sure that the core system was pretty clean and that the API was functional before we really started pushing on that.
Yeah. What about supporting? I know you said the themes were kind of not really there, but I mean, what about responsive design so that if I do log in on a smaller device or a smaller screen, it will adapt to that layout?
That's what Bootstrap is really bringing to the table for us. So not so much in the core system. We hope to bring that into the core system with 3.1, though.
Okay, great. I'll start and finish my other question that I was starting to say before, which is there anything else that we haven't covered that you want to make sure our audience is aware of?
No, I think that pretty well hits it. Just want to let people know that, yes, we're looking for active contributors, especially designers.
Mm-hmm. And is this something that I can, like, can I do it only having played with Microsoft Project for about 2 hours, or do I need to have a lot more background for it?
You would be able to do it okay if you've got a little bit of a played with Microsoft Project a little bit. It's really sort of built for people, though, who are managing projects, preferably larger, not just sort of like the one-off, hey, there's 5 things to do on this project, but sort of things of, hey, look, there are 50 things to do. This thing has to be done after this thing. you know, this task might take 5 hours and this task takes 20 hours. So sort of the more complex it is, the more of a sweet spot it is for web to project.
Cool. And I also heard earlier, and I just want to point this out for the people at home, I heard you say you use OS 10, correct?
Yes, I do.
Okay, great. I hate people rib on me for, like, you know, I'm taping the show right now. I'm sitting in front of a Mac laptop and I use an iPhone, and people yell at me for that. But you don't need to use Linux for everything, truly, guys. You use where it works. That's all that matters.
Well, and honestly, I ran Ubuntu for probably 5 or 6 years, almost exclusively on laptop and desktop and everything. When I joined Twilio, they gave me a MacBook Pro. And when I was getting 6 and 7 hours of battery life, it's hard to beat that. I travel a lot, and to be able to get on a flight, use my laptop the entire time, get off, use it in the cab on the way to the hotel, and not have to plug in until I get to the hotel, beat that. It's such a distinguishing thing. I can't not do that.
Yep. Okay. My final two questions. You probably have heard the show before. You know what they are. What's your favorite scripting language? I bet I already know what that is.
I do a lot in PHP. Having more and more fun with Python lately, so I'm pretty open to that. But PHP right now has the lead.
And your favorite text editor?
I use Vim. Big fan of Vim.
Yay.
Shot on both sides. Shot on both sides. A point for the opponents on both sides. Man. At least you're using an OS X laptop.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I was at a conference a few years ago, and one of the presenters got up and showed me the Vim gang sign.
Ooh.
VI. Yeah. So I was sold after that. I mean, like, how do you beat that?
You should see the Emacs gang sign.
Yeah, I was going to say. I don't...
Wait. No, I thought it involved at least 12 fingers.
Well, it's the pinky that gets strength in Emacs. You got to keep hitting all the control key and the escape key all the time. So
yeah,
it's pinky.
Six other keys at the same time, right?
Yeah, exactly. But they're there. They're just curled. I just made that up. I have no idea if there's an Emacs gang sign, but whatever.
If that was really a gang sign, that'd be a pretty weak gang sign, I just got to say.
Here, let me wiggle my pinkies at you.
It's a meta gang sign. That's what it is. Well, Keith, it's been wonderful having you on the show. I know we've introduced Web2Project to a whole new realm of audience for you, and I hope that works out for you. And more success, and hopefully your 3.0 release comes out on schedule. And I'm looking forward to the 3.1 bootstrap stuff happening as well, so we can do better theming. Thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Very cool. That was Keith Casey, the head honcho and chief of staff of the Web2Project. Oh, I should mention, by the way, I don't know if we made it clear in the opening of the show, but this is Web2Project. If you're not watching the video, you might not know that. So it's not converting a web into a project. It's Web2Project. Aaron, what do you think?
That's pretty cool. I'm really glad that now I have an opportunity to recommend a really good open source project management system. I know there are others out there, but I mean, I was pleasantly surprised with the amount of integration that was offered, the plugin system. I mean, at first I was thinking, oh, it's just a web-based thing and it's, you know, whatever, but it's actually very well thought out and full featured. So, I think anybody could pick this up and use it for their day-to-day project management system.
Yeah, and I was looking at the documentation and kind of skimming through it, trying to figure out sort of what the scope of the tool is. And it, you know, I haven't done any big projects with either. I played with Microsoft Project back in the early days. I have OmniPlan version 1. I was looking at actually buying OmniPlan version 2, but I'm not doing construction projects. But sometimes in software, it's kind of nice to have dependencies triggered and manage stuff with estimates and stuff. So although software is not the best way to do this, you really want to go more towards agile. But it's a really important thing to have available to you, and doing it in an automated way that everybody can share the information and can manage their part of the process is essential to all modern engineering, all modern construction, things like that. And I really like that this thing looks, you know, fairly mature in this space. You know, they still got a ways to go. They're getting some of their technical debt, the scrappy HTML. I'm really familiar with that from previous projects I worked on, even the current projects I'm in. So it looks like they're working towards that, and they've got a good team, and they're on their way. I'm a little concerned that this is a labor of love in the sense that somebody at some point needs to be able to provide commercial support for this, or there'll be a lot of places they won't be able to sell this into. Do you agree? Or
yeah, absolutely. And then I think that's, but I don't think that's a too much of a limiting factor. I think that can be picked up easily. It just requires someone to have the interest level and the determination to go do it. And there has to be demand from customers. I mean, that's the other flip side of this is if customers aren't demanding support right now, if they're comfortable supporting it themselves, then, you know, it's a little bit of a catch 22. I mean, you have to have a business model, and part of the business model has to say that people want this out in the marketplace. They want you to support this. So, I think that'll come with just naturally, through the evolution of the system. If people want support, then someone will pick it up and start offering support.
Yeah, I remember that originally that was a concern when Perl was starting to be the darling language of the web back in the early 90s. That people
you mean
were,
it isn't anymore?
It's a smaller piece of a bigger pie. It's a smaller piece of a bigger pie. There's more Perl going on today than there ever was by way far, by huge. In fact, there's a worldwide Perl programmer shortage, and we're trying to address concerns about that. But in the early days when it was being adopted, people were saying, well, I can't use this unless there's commercial support, because the open source world hadn't really sort of rolled out yet. People didn't understand what open source is really about. So they're saying, well, I get this for free, but what if something breaks? You know, and of course, now the answer is you send in a bug request to P5P and, you know, download the patch the next day. But ActiveState out in Vancouver, British Columbia, offered support, commercial support for their ActiveState Perl and a few other products that they had there. And I remember sort of the interesting aspect of that, which is that people would then be able to use it because they go to their manager and say, well, if we need commercial support, we can always solicit it from ActiveState. And then they never used it. They never needed it. They never actually signed up with ActiveState. So the program failed poorly, you know, because it's the kind of thing that a manager needs to have a checkbox to check off. But everybody that's sort of at the grunt level and slightly upward understands, no, we can just go online and you know, talk to the forums and go to the wonderful mailing list that were back then and the Usenet groups and stuff like that. There were plenty of easy support that way. So maybe you're right. Maybe this is only something that in theory people would need. And of course, that was 15 years ago. So the world has changed a lot since then about attitude towards open source and about community-supported items.
Yep, definitely.
Okay, great. Well, I think that's all we want to say on that. I, unlike most of the software, I don't know if I'd actually have a lot of use for this. I just don't especially want to install PHP and MySQL on anything that I run. So I probably won't be playing with this, unlike all the rest of them. But speaking of awkward transitions, we have upcoming guests. The list is getting shorter and shorter. I am sending out emails almost every weekend, and I'm just not getting a lot of response, which really scares me. It's like, what's the matter? People don't want to be on the show. But anyway, so we do have two guests still booked. We don't have a guest next week. So next week is the mystery guest. I hope that fills in. I've got like two or three people I'm asking, just hurry, hurry, hurry. But the week following, we have Serenity for Android. It's a Plex media server client for tablets and Google TV devices. Sounds like a lot of fun with that. And another one I'm looking forward to, Ansible Works, which is deployment software similar to Puppet or Chef, allow you to set up your machines from bare metal all the way through to having all the connections set up, all your networks set up, and then all the software loaded on it that needs to be there and all the configurations of all those. Apparently, it's being used by some very large deployments, like similar to like Puppet and Chef and CF Engine and whoever else is in that space, SaltStack. And I still am filling Q3. I'm sending out emails as quick as I can. If you want to see who's on the short list of getting on the show, or if you want to add more people to that, go see first if they're on the list. If they're not on the list, which is where we got to tell you where it is, go to twitch.tv/floss. And there's a spreadsheet link from there. See who's upcoming guests. There's upcoming guest link right there. And if you see somebody, no, I said that backwards. If you don't see somebody that you want to be on the list, if you know of somebody that you want to be on the show but isn't on the list, there we go, English Randall, then email me, merlin@stoneedge.com, and I will either try to get a hold of them, or best would be if you could email the project leader at a lot of the previous shows have done. And have them email me. That'd be great. So you follow us on Floss Weekly on Google Plus. I announce all the new guests as they come on, and I also announce give about an hour announcement before the show starts. We're also Floss Weekly on, I've got to get this right now, it's no longer Identica. Identica's gone away. It's post.io now, so I have to remember to say that when I'm getting down to this part of the show. We're also on Twitter at Floss Weekly. We have a live chat. We took a couple questions from there this time at live.twitch.tv. We typically tape at 8:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays. But if you go to the spreadsheet, you can find out exactly when that is. So that's good. You can follow me at Merlin on, I guess it's right again, post.io and Identica. Post.io and Twitter. There we go. But mostly what I'm talking at is Google Plus, Randall L. Schwartz. I post a lot of things about open source software, about other things that I'm curious about, and a lot of things about health, because I'm now reading like 65 health blogs and finding all sorts of useful information about how conventional wisdom is all screwed up. I think that's enough plugging for me. Coming up in a few weeks, we're going to take a couple week break, the weeks of July 3rd and July 10th. I'm going to be on a cruise ship, and I just chatted with the co-host, and we figured it would be best to just kind of take a slight break there so that you don't have to try to fill a guest on July 3rd, which in the U.S. is a holiday week. So, oh, that's all good. I think that's enough things for me to talk about. Aaron, what do you want to plug?
Well, as usual, you can follow me on Google Plus. It's the best way to get a hold of me. Add me to your circles there. And if you also want to follow me on Facebook or Twitter, that's fine too. It's just that it's easier for me to have a conversation with you if you're on Google Plus. I've been having some great conversations lately about my new phone. I just got a Galaxy S4. And of course, I've been putting there it is right there. And I've been putting, I just put Cyanogen Mod on it last night. And so I had a great conversation with people about the benefits of, you know, going with a mod as opposed to staying with the stock, TouchWiz or what have you. So I talk about that. I received my Ouya. If you don't know what that is, it's a kind of an open hardware based gaming system that runs Android. And I just got that in. So I've been talking about that a lot. And all sorts of things. So those are the kinds of things I like to talk about. And if you want to talk about those things too, definitely add me to your circles on Google Plus. And yeah, I think that's it.
Cool. And I just got whapped by the chat room. Apparently, Identica is becoming pump.io. I don't know what I just said, but it's not pipe.io. I thought it was, yeah, it's pump. Pump.io. I guess pipe.io is taken. Too bad.
makes more sense, I think, pipe than pump. But
It sort of does. That's probably why my brain just changed it over. Evan Pompadour, who was actually a guest on the show many moons ago, is still in charge of all that. And he sent out a notice to say if you're going to migrate, you should definitely be active within the last 30 days. And I realized that my Merlin account hadn't been active, only my Floss Weekly account there. And so I said, I want to migrate, help out. He said, just make a post in the next few days. That's fine. I go, okay. Whew. So I will be actually on with my old credentials over on pump.io. That'll be great. So changes in the open source world. That's how it works. Well, thanks for tuning into this show and listening to our subjects and listening to our subjects, our people we interview. Oh, God, this is horrible. Anyway, before I make any more mistakes, we'll see you all again next time on Floss Weekly.